We've got some things to talk about this week. Some fun things, some new things, some different things. So let's kick it off with something crazy that happened this week. Apple's first tweet. And from there, we'll talk about privacy and security because it's all one thing.
This was mental, right? Like, you know, I've been on a tire for a while. That Apple has a Twitter account. They don't use it. All they do is push ads on it, right? That strategy alone is confusing to me because you're making a promoted tweet to share to people who want to engage with, but you could get more engagement if you just publicly tweeted it as well. So, like, I never really understood that, but they were persistent. Even though they tweet on, like, secondary accounts like the Apple Music account, the Apple TV account, you know, the Beats One account, they have, you know, plenty of other accounts, but their main, like, at Apple account has never tweeted. It's only done ads. Well, this week it did tweet, but not quite in the way that I think Apple wanted to christen its entrance into Twitter, because the entire, like, basically a Twitter hack of pretty big proportion sent this kind of like Bitcoin scam running around the Apple account. It affected like Barack Obama's account, affected Elon Musk's account. Like,
I mean, it started with Elon, and it did not, I mean, it was like possible, you know?
That, yeah, like Elon
a really bad
a
tweet.
Elon tweets a lot of rubbish, but yeah. It, you know, as soon as you see it on two places at once, you're like, okay, here we go. This is 100% a hack. Just like, and the tweets like were slightly different in wording, but the Apple one was like, we're giving back to our community. We support Bitcoin and we believe you should too. And basically the scam was they put a Bitcoin address in the tweet. And the idea was that if you sent your Bitcoin, a share of your Bitcoin to the wallet, they would send you, you know, double back, which is like a classic scam, right? We'll send you some, we'll send you. Obviously the scam is they never actually send any back. They just keep it for themselves. But it's just this crazy, like, eventuality. Like, how rare is it for, like, an Apple official account to be compromised? And originally, it wasn't entirely clear if it was, like, a targeting of individual accounts, but now it seems like it was a more fundamental attack on Twitter's, like, internal tooling. Maybe they had help from the inside. The exact reasoning's still unknown, but, you know, Apple's kind of wasted its first ever tweet on a Bitcoin scam, which is hilarious.
Yeah, it was wild to see play out.
They even changed the icon, remember? Like, the icon went to the normally the Apple like, you know, avatar is this black Apple logo, but for whatever reason the hackers are like, let's change it to a gray one while we're at it. And they've changed it back now, but I think if you actually look at the new replaced icon, it's actually off center. Like, they haven't fixed it after they put back in. So
that's the real havoc that was wreaked this week.
Yeah, exactly. The one pixel alignment problem is, you know, wreaking havoc even now. But it was kind of funny. Like, in the wake of this, everyone's saying, you know, like, reset your password and, you know, make sure you've got two-factor enabled. Well, for a start, all verified accounts have to have two-factor authentication. They don't let you have them nowadays without it.
I mean, and it doesn't have to be SMS. It can be with another app, right? Or Twitter?
I think Twitter's still SMS only. Because I use SMS two-factor for Twitter, because I don't think
I use 1Password for the code.
Okay, fair enough. So maybe they do support apps as well. But I guess what people complain about is that app-based two-factor isn't required. They basically promote you to use the SMS version,
right?
And that might be something that Twitter policy changes in the light of this scandal, is that they'll make everyone use, you know, more secure versions of two-factor. But what's the point in changing the locks on the door if the robber's already inside? Which is kind of what happened in this case, right? Everyone's saying, oh, it's time to change your password when you've got two-factor enabled. But if Twitter's compromised, you know, at that level internally, it doesn't matter what protections you're putting in your account. They have access to the database, essentially. They can get whatever they want. So it was kind of like, you know, obviously, you know, privacy practice is important. But in this case, it was an example of where just because you've got a password on your data, you know, if it's not in end-to-end encrypted, someone can hack in and get access to it from the other side, right? They don't have to have your password to get access to your account. And this kind of like blends into, you know, all this kind of like privacy stuff that iOS 14 does, right? Like, just on the Twitter thing quickly, it was really crazy because they had to like, it didn't even seem like Twitter knew what was happening at first. Like, it took them a while to sort it out because they had to like turn off tweeting for all verified accounts. And, you know, it was kind of crazy, right? So mental situation, and maybe there'll be like a movie about it someday because it was pretty crazy. But how this correlates to iOS 14, obviously, is that Apple is a big, you know, promoter and activist on privacy topics, on security, and as well as doubling down on not collecting a lot of data, the data that does get collected, they're, you know, putting more and more attention on what apps can access, locking it down, putting more things behind permission dialogues. One of the things that's coming up with the iOS 14 stuff is the clipboard situation. And so with that, like, all of these apps keep getting, you know, framed as stealing the information, because what iOS 14 does is when an app requests access to the contents of the clipboard, it puts up a little banner that says, like, you know, Apollo pasted from Safari. So Apollo's a Reddit client, and it, you know, checks the clipboard, and then it pops up a little banner. And there's been so many of these in the last, like, month since iOS 14 came out.
There's even, like, a lawsuit against LinkedIn.
Yeah, there's a lawsuit against LinkedIn. Who, you know, people make lawsuits every single day, so it's kind of irrelevant, right? Like, you can make a lawsuit over anything.
It's like, because of iOS 14, someone can sue LinkedIn now.
Yeah, because, like, the real, like, symptom here is that Apple should have probably put the clipboard as sensitive data a long time ago, and they never did. And because they basically co-opted the Mac model, right? Like, from the desktop, if you copy and paste something as an application, you don't get any reporting on the desktop. And even on Big Sur, you can copy and paste, and there's no alert, right? Like, so they've only started doing it now on iOS. And so, obviously, the banner kind of shines a light on malicious uses. And I'm sure there are a few of them. And some people have created, like, ad networks and stuff who would basically spy on your clipboard. And depending on, like, the keywords that you've copied, be able to, you know, target your advertising better or maybe identify you uniquely. And then there's other kind of uses of the clipboard where it's, like, perfectly legitimate, but it causes, like, it's like scaremongering because it causes the banners to appear. And Apple's presentation of the banner doesn't know the intent of what the app's doing, right? That's the problem. It's like a black box. So if an app's copying the data just to check it locally to see if there's a link in it and then redirect you to an appropriate part of the application, which is what Apollo does, right? So Apollo Reddit, if you copy a subreddit link to your clipboard, when you open the Reddit app, it can automatically tell you, do you want to go and see this post directly? So it's like a convenient shortcut, right? Which is quite handy. But the symptom of that in iOS 14 is that every time the app comes to the foreground, it says that Apollo's checked your clipboard, which it technically has, but it's not actually storing that information or sending it off anywhere else. And I think in the LinkedIn case, they said there was just, like, this behavior with the text view component they were using where it was trying to, like, see if there was a link there and, you know, automatically paste it in or give you a one tap to paste in the link to the document. And they were just kind of using a rather bad way of implementing it where they were, like, checking the clipboard every keystroke, whereas they could have just waited for, like, notifications and stuff to know about it better. But that was causing, you know, craziness. We had the TikTok example. They said that they were using the clipboard as a way to prevent fraud. Now, you know, TikTok's a Chinese company. It gets a lot of scrutiny. Who knows what their real utility of the clipboard was. There is a chance that it was actually genuinely for fraud prevention, because if you've got like one of those clip farm bots, have you seen those videos where there's just a wall of phones and then they just automatically, like, tweeting or following people or liking things on Facebook? There are versions of that for TikTok, and checking the clipboard is, like, a clever way of detecting if you're a robot or not, because if you're going to just paste in a load of text, most humans aren't going to paste in a load of text every single time. So it's kind of like a heuristic they can use. So that might have been what's happening. Obviously, in the wake of the scandal and it becoming so apparent, they've got rid of it, so clearly they can, you know, live without it. But this is just all these kind of, like, follow-on ramifications of literally all that happens is iOS 14 is telling you it's happening. And the kind of issue is that say if you've got an app that you have to use, right? Like, it's essential to your business or it's essential to your life. Well, the iOS 14 will tell you that it's copying the clipboard, but, you know, as an individual, there's not really anything you can do about it, right? You just kind of know. Like, you can't delete the app if you need it, right? Like, iOS 14 doesn't let you say, never let this app access the clipboard, for instance. And so you're just kind of left in this limbo where it's like, well, this app might be spying on me, but, you know, I don't actually have the tools to deal with it. I don't know what you think about stuff like that. Like, it's kind of like a shame blame a name game, and it's such a wide net of stuff that it, like, raises on. Clearly, it has unintended consequences, and even in the legitimate cases, you know, your only recourse is to delete the application and hope, I guess.
Yeah, I think the beta period is kind of like when Apple expects developers to figure this out, because you immediately hear from users, public beta testers, developers, other, you know, other developers, and people just trying out the beta that, hey, this is happening. I mean, it's in the beta period where someone manages to sue LinkedIn for how their app is working. So it's certainly getting attention before the final release in the fall. And I do agree with you. Like, there's no action for users. Then it's all about shaming and, you know, creating, a reason for users to complain to developers about, hey, what is this? And in the case of apps that we really enjoy, like Apollo, like deliveries, for example, it's an app that I love to use to track, shipments coming to me. They, they kind of fall into this by accident, because they're using it legitimately for features. And so what we'll see, you know, by the fall is developers are kind of, you know, hastily trying to improve how they communicate what they're doing to users, which is probably a good thing. You know, that's okay. Personally, I would turn it off because, if you could and you can't,
like, just don't show the banners ever.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, privacy, it's good, it's positive. We'll have a good thing, but it kind of reminds me of the way that people viewed Catalina on the Mac, mm-hmm. as like too
aggressive and just telling you stuff.
Right. Just interrupts what you, it doesn't interrupt because it's just a banner, but it's still distracting. And even before iOS 14 beta, there was this new behavior in iOS 13.4 or 5, I forget what version, but it was the version that makes you confirm to add something to your reading list. Like Twitter, where I add things to my reading list all the time. And, you know, if you do it from an Apple app, you don't see that. But if you do it from a third-party app, you have to confirm that you want to add something to your reading list.
Every single time.
Every time. And it should be a learned behavior.
You go to the standard share sheet, you click the add to reading list button, and it tells you, do you actually want to add this to your reading list? Yes or no? Like,
yeah.
Completely redundant, just gets in your way for what should be a one click.
Like, I've built the muscle memory now of, you know, tap, confirm, just like so many other things that are just not really optimized for efficiency. But this kind of puts me, it reminds me of that situation where it's just like, it's not really feature creep, but it's like, you know, just slowly they're adding on things that are good and well intentioned, but for the user, it's
you're not, it's really given a path to do anything about it, right?
Sure. Like, right yeah,
it's just kind of sat in front of you, and most people just carry on and don't think of it twice, right?
Like, I mean, the feature for deliveries is that you've got a tracking number or a code on your clipboard. You know, you select it, you copy it, and then you open deliveries, and then it recommends, you know, it says, hey, you've got a tracking number on your clipboard, do you want to make this something that you have in your database? And you say yeah. You know, and if Apple's just like entirely against that, then say so, because there's other ways of doing that. You know, there's extensions where you can like select it and then add it through mm-hmm. the extension in the share sheet. But
I think it'd be nice if you could like click on the banner that pops down.
Yeah.
And it says like ignore in future. So for that application, you never get notified about it again. Or you can like ban access to the clipboard for that app, right? Because then that actually gives some utility to the feature rather than just like a warning sign every single time. Because even like a user copy or a user paste causes the banner alert. Like if you go into the Notes app and you go, you know, double click paste, it will tell you that you've pasted from another application. You know you're doing that. You've done it yourself, right? Because the API yeah. at the APA level, it doesn't know where it came from. So it just kind of has to put the banner up in every single case. But that becomes very annoying very quickly. And in the Reddit case, there's probably there's some mitigation, because in iOS 14, they are adding an API which kind of lets an app know if there's a URL on the clipboard without actually having to check the clipboard. So it won't tell you what the URL is. It will just say on the clipboard, there is a URL. And so if Reddit came to the, if the Apollo for Reddit, we're just using Apollo because it's a great app and it's, you know, an obvious example of this, right? I'm not trying to pick them out, you know, single them out. Every developer is facing the same problem here. But Apollo comes to the foreground, it can, you know, on the updated version, it would be able to say, is there a link on the clipboard? And if the answer is no, it can just carry on without doing anything, and the banner won't be shown. If the answer is yes, the banner will still be shown. So even when you wanted, you know, if you have actually copied a link to use it in Apollo Reddit, the banner will still come up. So it cuts out kind of the false negative cases, but the false positive cases still survive. And in the case of deliveries, there's no API for, is the delivery number on the clipboard? Yes or right. No? So it's, you know, completely helpless there.
Yeah. Yep. What would be a quick update on the Twitter hack story? Something we'll talk about later in this episode is the Apple News Today podcast from mm-hmm. Apple, and they covered the story. They mentioned that Bill Gates and Barack Obama were hacked, or they did not mention that Apple was hacked. So, go figure.
That's some classic overlap of
humble,
you know, Apple being editorial as well as being in the news. Like, it's a classic. Classic conflict of interest there. Yeah.
That's right. All right. The greens and orange dot thingy, that's the official name, I believe, in iOS 14.
this is the same kind of theme just as the clipboard stuff, but it hasn't like, with the clipboard stuff, anyone can download an app, and if the clipboard banner appears, you can tweet about it and get 1,000 retweets. So at the moment, that's like the meme, right? The orange and green dots haven't quite reached that same level of, you know, hype, but they're basically the same thing as the clipboard, except they apply to if an app's currently using the microphone or if it's currently using the camera. And so most, you know, most decent apps that are non-malicious, if you're using a camera, they'll show you your camera on the screen, right? Maybe in a little thumbnail window in the corner, maybe full screen, depending on what's going on, right? Mm-hmm. Basically, if an app's doing it legitimately, you know the camera's being used, right? Because you see it. But there isn't actually a requirement for an application to do that. Like, the way that the framework works, you can just request the camera feed and just not show it on the screen at all. So this is what these dots are defending against, because they're trying to let you know, okay, this application is accessing the camera, but it doesn't make any sense for it to access the camera.
Yeah, I mean, it's the equivalent of what you have on webcams, on MacBooks, you know, the little right. green dot. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, the green LED on the MacBooks is kind of like fixed in hardware, so the light has to turn on when the camera turns on. The ones on the iPhone and the iPad are software-based, but similar right. to similar effect, right?
Have you seen how it looks on non-10 phones?
I think it just puts like a dot in the status bar.
Okay.
Just
I haven't seen it myself.
Yeah, I think curious. It just puts like a dot in the status bar. So,
because otherwise it fits up in the,
the ear. Yeah, the notch. Yeah, the notch.
yeah.
It's at least like, again, you have the same problem of, well, if there's an app you really need to use and it's accessing my camera, but I don't like. I guess in the camera microphone cases, they do actually offer privacy settings for you to turn it off. So sure. You can actually go into settings privacy and say, don't allow this app to access my camera. Don't allow this app to access my microphone. Say if you've got like an app where you do actually want it to have camera access because mm-hmm. you want to take pictures in it, or it's like a video chat app, right? Say it's a malicious video chat app that does actually do video calls, so you use it, but when you're not actually on a video call, it's still accessing your camera. Again, in those situations, there's nothing you can do about it. So,
yeah, I saw Dave Zatz, he saw that... Zoom, if you use Zoom, it has a built-in, like as part of the user interface, a mute your mic button. And so the idea there is you tap it and other people on the call can't hear you, but the microphone dot stays lit. And so it's still using your microphone, probably, you know, taking your volume, your input volume down to zero, but it's still accessing it. And so it doesn't really, the dot doesn't tell you, you know, you're being heard or not. It doesn't connect the right way. So like, that's kind of misleading people.
Yeah, I guess that's my main like criticism of, you know, Catalina's privacy dialogues or these dialogues.
It's like, what do you do about them?
Yeah, and like they a lot of the time they're scaring people when there's no need to be, right? Like it's hard to know where to go, because the clipboard situation could actually be abused, but mm-hmm. how do you add in a protection for that, you know, in iOS 14, apart from adding a dialogue? And at some point, there's just so many dialogues, people just get bored of pressing OK to dialogues. Like, I can say with my experience of Catalina, you know, when all those alerts popped up, I don't think I stopped using any application because of any individual saying, or, you know, this app wants to access your documents folder, this app wants to access your desktop. Like, I just want to use the app, so I just press yes, yes, yes. Like, I don't think those privacy dialogues have ever actually helped me stop against anything, right? They're not actually helping me.
Yeah, yeah, no, I agree with you there. And then this we're not done yet on these Catalina style alerts and everything. Local network warning. So what this is whenever it's similar to Bluetooth a few years ago, where if, I guess that was maybe last year, the year before, where if an app, previously could access Bluetooth with iOS, I guess 13, you had to give permission for it to access Bluetooth. And some things were legitimate, like if you wanted to, interact with a Chromecast, for example, then that was Bluetooth discovered, and that's part of how it paired and made the connection. And so that was legitimate. But then there were also things like Facebook that would access Bluetooth, and you really didn't know why. And there were things that you'd wonder, like, well, if I want to put this on, like, you know, headphones, then should I turn on Bluetooth so that I can listen to a Facebook video on headphones? And the answer to that was no, but it wasn't clear. You just had to kind of experiment with it as a user. And now we have this thing with local network warnings. So it'll prompt you as a permission dialogue. It'll ask you for permission to, let the app access your, Wi-Fi network, for example. And I haven't deep dived into this, and I'm not a developer, so I'm not, you know, so sure what's happening here, except for that it's similar to Bluetooth. And so from my perspective, it's just one more thing where, I don't know, I guess I wanted to be able to use Wi-Fi, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad you actually said that, because 99% of people are going to be just like you,
yeah,
and have literally no clue what they're agreeing or denying here. Like, yeah. I didn't know the whole story. Like, there is a local networking API, so I assumed it was kind of related to that, but it also triggers in other cases as well. So, like, this is literally a dialogue that nobody really knows what it controls. Like, and so do you say yes? Do you say no? Well, I guess you just say no. And then if something breaks, you go into settings and turn it back on again.
Like, that because of the nature of the way, because of the way that Apple's been producing these alerts without enough context to make it an educated decision in the moment. My new strategy has been, no to everything, you know, no to alerts until I want, you know, those things you understand. No to location services, no to alerts, no to whatever, and I'll say no why it needs that. And it's that way for Bluetooth. And then hopefully, you know, kind of the model right now is that, you know, if YouTube wants access to Bluetooth, then they have to tell you in the app somewhere that you turned it off and that you have to turn it on to access this feature.
Yeah.
And that kind of works, you know, But again, I'm doing the same thing with apps now for networking requests, where I just say no, and then we'll see what breaks, and then turn it on as needed.
And local networking, if you say no, it doesn't mean that it can't access your Wi-Fi. It means it can't access devices on your Wi-Fi, like your printer or other devices trying to be like a shared device on the network. That's kind of basically what they're going for there. But I would argue, A, it's so confusing that no one's going to know what it means. B, I'm not sure what the privacy risk is there really, because... You know, there must be some exposure that is subtle, otherwise they wouldn't have done it. But, like, it just feels this whole situation, just adding dialogues or adding banners, is just very suboptimal. And for something like location services, location data is so sensitive. You want it to be, you know, upfront, direct. Yes, no, do you want to do this, right?
Which I'm sure you mentioned before, but they've improved the way that it works. But now you can select precise or general. So, like, for a weather app, for example, you can say, I want my general location to be provided, but not my precise, like my street level location, because you're just checking the weather for this zip code, for example, and you don't need to know if I'm on this street, you know, or I'm traveling over here. And that's cool. I'm using a lot of that, and I'm making those sound decisions of like, well, this one is a delivery app for food, and they really wanted to know where I am. Or this one doesn't need my precise location. So, you know, it's nice.
Yeah. And like last year they added allow once. So like, say if you had a delivery app that saves your address for next time, you can just allow it access to your location one time to actually fill in your address for you. And then it can just remember that address and not remember your current location every other minute of the day. Right. Like, so the location stuff, location data is so privileged and important that I agree. I should have all these elevations, and the direct dialogues are very much welcome, and they've been like that for years, right? But I think there needs to be more consideration for the kind of like second tier stuff, because you can't just keep adding dialogues. Like, there's so many dialogues that nobody understands, and everyone just presses yes or no to without knowing what they're agreeing to or not, and just getting annoyed by it. Then you've got the clipboard stuff, which just tells you about it every single time, but there's nothing you can do about it. Like, there has to be a better approach here somehow. I don't have all the answers, but I just kind of wanted to raise it, because I feel like it's kind of to the point now where it's kind of hurting the user experience. Like, it just feels annoying.
It's very much a Catalina moment for iOS, and that is a mix of good and bad. And it's just, they're adding more and more every year, which, I mean, it goes back to the whole Steve Jobs thing, keep asking until the user gets tired of it. I guess what we didn't get from that is, like, then what do you do when the user gets tired of it? I guess he said, keep asking, but, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And by the way, speaking of food, do you want to talk about Sunbasket for a moment?
Let's go for it. Do you want to skip the grocery store? With more of us avoiding outdoor trips than ever before, Sunbasket is a great way to eat delicious, healthy food without having to go out of your house. Get oven-ready meals delivered to you each week. Sunbasket oven-ready meals are made with organic, fresh produce, sustainable seafood, and using meat that is free of antibiotics, hormones, and steroids. And their chefs have won Michelin stars and a James Beard Award. So why not take the night off and let them cook for you? You can try delicious meals such as pappardelle pasta with wilted spinach, sweet peas and fresh ricotta, or southwestern turkey and sweet potato skillet, or maybe even cauliflower macaroni and cheese. Sunbasket oven-ready meals come freshly prepared. There's no recipe to follow or prep needed. You can just put them straight in the oven and they heat up in as little as 6 minutes. Incredibly convenient. All you have to do is heat and eat, which means no mess in your kitchen and far less cleanup than a traditional prepared meal. Sunbasket also has paleo, vegetarian, Mediterranean, and gluten-free options to check out as well. Sunbasket facilities have the highest level of food and employee safety. In the wake of COVID-19, Sunbasket is reinforcing strict adherence to its operating procedures and increasing how regularly it sanitizes offices and its distribution centers. So if you want to take advantage of this, right now Sunbasket is offering $35 off your order when you go to sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour, all one word, at checkout. That's sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour at checkout for $35 off your order. sunbasket.com/happyhour, promo code happyhour.
Oven baked ready, I can handle that, cool. All right, Mia, what are you going to talk about next? Anything on your mind?
Right, so kind of last week, you gave me a little curveball. And you told me that you'd sold everything.
I sold a lot. I went Elon Musk and sold, you know, all the things that now.
You own no possessions anymore.
I'm so far removed from it now. It's been a week that it's like, what even did I sell? As part of, taking on a whole new interest in space and doing spaceexplore.com for the 9to5 network, and having, the new Space Time podcast, launched yesterday, I've tried to, sort of reapproach how I handle my focus and sort of limiting distractions and just being like laser focused on these are the tools that are getting the work done for or helping me get the work done. And, and then these are the things that are kind of just satellite accessories and I don't really have to have them, to get the job done. And so, I've streamlined my tools, in terms of technology to be the iPhone that I have and the Mac that I have and AirPods. So, you know, they're in the mix. A couple of displays at the desk, and that's it. And so that leaves out the iPad and the Apple Watch, which is, probably the biggest move for me.
Right. But, you've been a big standard bearer for the watch since it came out. Right?
Yeah. And so some of that is like, and I'm also like, I'm because of Happy Hour and doing, the recording style that we do, I often have an idea like on the fly as you're talking. And if I don't write it down, I'll forget it and I won't get back to it. And so I've taken to, using a notebook for that purpose. And since then, I've kind of adapted that to using a notebook for a lot of different things, if I have an idea. And so I had like a really healthy moment of purge where it was like, let me, just have a few things that I have to have that I couldn't function without, and the things that I can get rid of, let's do that for now. And it's been a real, real cool experience. One thing with the watch is that, when I'm riding my motorcycle, for one, it had some pretty cool utility where like I could have my phone in my backpack or my pocket. And then if I'm like at a stop sign or a red light, I can change the music or adjust it. But I'd also find that it was like as equally distracting to like want to like, check. Right. And so it's been nice to just like, now when I go out for a ride, I've got a Bluetooth helmet, and that's music and podcast navigation. And kind of a cool part of this is now I'm having to sort of appreciate Siri, because without the watch, Siri becomes a lot more important. I mean, it's important for the watch, but like if you get an alert and you're using earphones or something, then Siri is kind of your way in to check and see like, well, what just happened, or to command things. And, and there's one thing of like using Siri on the wrist and saying like, do this, do that. That feels like you're kind of in control. But you're going out a little bit more on a ledge on your own when it's just Siri with no, visual interface to it. So I'm enjoying that experience. It kind of reminds me of, like the pre-watch days, I guess, where that's what Siri was. And then the HomePod stay in the lineup. So they're a big part of being, kind of connected when I don't have something on me, at home. And that's very cool. But I want to focus on the watch here for a moment, because kind of what happened there was, I was kind of in a rut with what I use the watch for the most, which is, I got really hooked on activity tracking And, you know, it, the watch got me into running. I never would have ran without the Apple Watch, and I never would have like done races with the Apple Watch. But then I got to a point where like it wasn't motivating, like that alone wasn't motivating enough. And so I kind of wanted it to do, and all the data that I was collecting was just like not useful because it wasn't making the effort to make it useful, I guess. And so it's just like a scale back. And let's just, you know, do that stuff without the watch involved, without all that data involved. So now I'm running and I never thought I would do this, but I'm running without the watch and like I'm running without collecting data. I'm just doing it for that purpose. You know, and that's kind of neat. And then like when a new watch comes out in the fall, you know, I will evaluate it. And if it's, you know, an advancement over the Series 5 in a way that actually affects me, like if it's blood oxygen sensor and that's like the big new thing,
who cares?
Yeah. I mean, that's cool, but it won't be like the selling point for me. It would need to be, I don't know what it would need to be actually. So, but I'm sure I'll go back to it, but I'm certainly going to enjoy the few months between now and then, to not have to think about it. And then I'll evaluate, you know, when the time comes. Another factor was WatchOS 7. Just, you know, it's not a bad update. It's got some cool features in it, and this is a weird year for, you know, watchOS and for all software updates because it was kind of where we are. And, you know, I was disappointed in sleep stuff and sleep tracking because my favorite features were on the iPhone, and that's sort of the wind down mode. And then the bedtime alarm clock and everything like, and those can supply data to the health app, I believe. And that's like what I need. And the watch, I guess, is mostly, you know, are you in bed? Are you asleep kind of thing? But it's not that granular like third party apps are for the watch. So, I guess I'm also kind of waiting to see like, you know, does future hardware kind of justify buying Bedit?
Yeah. Know? Like we, there has to be something that, you know, the 4 years of development since buying Bedit has actually led to, right? Because what they shipped and what we see now is just a very, you know, bare bones, oh, you're in bed and now you've woken up, like, system. Yeah. And it just feels there's something missing. And maybe there is a super secret hardware feature on the next watch that can amplify the sleep tracking with some crazy overlay of extra insight. But there certainly's been rumors. There haven't been any rumors about it, right? Like, Quo's been very silent on watch hardware this year. Like, it's a big question mark about what they're actually going to deliver. And I 100% agree with you. I think WatchOS 7, you know, didn't address core issues like the always-on display.
That's like the big thing. Like, I had a list of, like, three things, and that's the one thing I can recall before WWDC is, like, this is what I actually want to see today, regardless of what's rumored. You know, and it's that with the Series 5 watch, which was released, you know, after WatchOS 6 came out, it had the ability to have your watch face show. It had some, you know, the time always. And if you're in an app, it shows you a digital clock with a blurred background. The only app that would work in the always on kind of mode is the workout app. And so for the workout app, you can see, you know, it's actually good. Like, it's useful. You can see the current time pass and the calories burning, that kind of thing with what you're doing in the workout. And that's cool. And so it seemed like the natural progression was now with WatchOS 7, we'll finish out the always on feature. We'll either bring it to more apps like maps, like now playing, timer. Like, I mean, the workout app is like a timer that counts up. I mean, come on. make an analog version of the always on watch face instead of just digital with a blurred background. Just have a simple analog version of that, because if you use an analog face, you get pushed into this digital watch mode. Whenever you use an app, or if you have the default setting on, if you're playing audio from your phone, it's going to be the now playing, you know, user interface on the watch, which gets covered up with the blurred background and the digital time over your analog watch face.
Yeah, and it's just a stupid context switch. If you're used to having an analog face, showing a digital face at the top is insane. Like, it's just so annoying.
Yeah. So, none of those things happened. There wasn't any additional Apple apps that supported always on, at least not yet. And then there was certainly no SDK for third-party developers to take advantage of, which is kind of what you'd expect. It's like, okay, Apple does it with Workout, then they bring it to more apps, and they bring it to all apps. You know, and they've got a framework that you got to work within, but that's how it works. And we haven't seen that yet, you know. And I know it's a weird year for the updates, but like that seems like that was kind of baked in.
Yeah, like at the very minimum, an analog always-on face just seems minimum viable. Yeah. You know, that seems like minimum level of...
Yeah, it didn't seem like it was being worked on in December before the world slowed down, and you know, because that's where so many of our reporting came from, was like what's being worked on in December. Yeah.
Whole thing is, you know, very reflective of what probably a lot of people feel about you know, Apple's devices. Like the phone's essential, right? No one's ever going to get rid of their phone. Like you basically need, if you're doing work, you're going to need like. Some people are going to get away with an iPad, but most people are still going to need a laptop or an iMac, right? And then the watch is a luxury at the end of the day, right? Like, I could, if, you know, it, like, get rid of the watch and carry on my life basically unchanged, right? I like having the watch and I do use it, but I could do it without, right? Like, I could run for half an hour every day and just time it on my phone. Like, I don't have to have the watch vibrating to let me know that.
Like, that's another point is that with the fitness stuff, you know, again, I never would have gotten to running without the Apple Watch. Like it was the Series 2 with GPS that made me even like want to test that out. I got into fitness in the first place because I wanted to try that stuff out for the watch in terms of reviewing it and just seeing what it's like. And that, you know, changed the course of, you know, the rest of my life probably, in terms of just being healthier. And, but now I am curious of like, what is it like to, I'm going to do a marathon in December. So what is it like to train for a marathon without the watch, without any kind of watch? And, you know, I've got the iPhone 11 Pro, not even the big one. So, you know, it's not that massive and heavy. You know, if I bring that along, I've got, you know, cellular, there's music streaming, there's great battery life, there's GPS, like all of those things. What am I missing out on? I guess heart rate, you know, but I actually use an external heart rate monitor, with the watch to, you know, prolong battery life. So I'm wondering if I'm going to get this, you know, very similar data that way, at least what I need. And then there's the whole thing where with machines, you know, treadmills, et cetera, you do get data from that too. And it's always been kind of a frustration that without GymKit being widely available
anywhere,
you have two sets of data where it's the watch data, which, you know, is probably what you go on in terms of like it knows more about you than the machine does. But then there's the machine data, which can vary. And it's like, you know, which one's canonical, I guess the watch is. But, you know, there's other ways to do this. And so I am going to have, you know, kind of fun this year, I think, doing, you know, for this fall, at least doing the same stuff with fitness minus the watch in the picture. But not without technology. The phone will still be involved because I have a struggle to run without music, you know, to work without music. So.
Like, obviously selling it is, you know, more drastic, but I think there is a real issue for Apple in, like, how are they going to get people to stay on the watch long term? Like, right now, watch sales are still going like that. They're still going up and up and up. But mm-hmm. I think most of that is just, you know, new people coming to the watch. Like, I'm not sure there is...
That's what they say.
Yeah, exactly. So,
that's what Apple says. Yeah.
You know, we saw that with the iPad as well. The iPad had, like, you know, 4 great years, and then it started to plateau pretty heavily and then started going downwards. And yeah. I think the watch could have the same fate where people, you know, they stick with the Series 3, they stick with the Series 4 for like 4 years and they don't see a reason to change it. You know, I didn't upgrade last year, right? Like, I haven't upgraded every single generation. Like, and then just never going to have the same kind of replacement cycle that you get on a phone, right? Or even like laptops last you, you know, 5 years, but they're also, you know, 5 times as expensive. So Apple kind of makes it up in the price of the machine, right? Like the watches, most people are buying the cheapest watch, which is, you know, 200, 300, 350, 399 at most, right? And so they're never going to get like, it's going to taper off. I think like there isn't that attachment rate of, you know, I love my watch so much that if I lost it tomorrow, I'm going to immediately go and buy another one. Do you know what I mean? Like if I lost my watch and it just fell in a river, I don't think I'd be compelled to go and replace it. Like, obviously, if I lost my phone, I'd have to go and buy a new phone. Do you know what I mean? Like, the watch is going to be in this situation where, you know, once it reaches critical mass and, you know, basically everyone that wants one has got one, like, I'm not sure they're actually going to be able to retain people as well as they can with other devices. Like, you're going to see casual upgrading, but I think you're going to see a lot of people just carry on with the current one until it dies. And some people might even just be like, well, I don't need this anymore. It's unnecessary. I've changed my habits. You know, I've got healthier. Because the fitness stuff is a huge portion of it. And if you use the watch to get fit, it's almost, as you do that, you're removing a need for it. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's kind of this kind of self-defeating aspect of it. So,
yeah. And I still think the watch is a great product. And it's like, you know, one of the most exciting things Apple's come out with.
Sure.
I mean, you know, in the last several years.
Like, exciting versus successful is a very different problem, though. Do you know what I mean? Like, and
I mean, it's not a failure.
It's not a failure, no. But you know, long-term outlook, is it going to be like an iPad where the sales start going down and going down, 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 and they go into like this rut? Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think they're going to be able to sustain the growth that they're having for a very long time. Like, I feel like they're going to taper off. Like, maybe I'll be wrong, but...
Yeah, I mean, my complaints are like very specific. It's like, you know, I think the average person might not have the same complaints. You know, I think common complaints are like, I can't stream Spotify music on it, you know, or save Spotify music on it.
One I hear a lot is WhatsApp, because there's no WhatsApp app for the watch. Everyone complains that you can only get notifications. You can't actually like send a message directly. Like,
right,
it's a big hole. So,
yeah, and they'll get there. And so maybe it will be that in the next, you know, year or so, the watch app situation improves, because there's already the kind of the groundwork for that to be done, and that'll change it for a lot of people. We'll see, but I'm not like totally out of it. I'm, you know, out of the watch just for now. And the same thing for the iPad. I mean, the iPad was the easier one to give up.
I haven't touched my iPad in, apart from testing iOS 14 stuff. Like, I don't use the iPad at the moment. Like, probably this entire year.
Yeah, and another part of it is like, I'm really excited about Max with ARM silicon, because, you know, most apps, if not all apps that I use on iOS, will be available to run on that Mac. And so I am all in on you know, a MacBook Pro with good feature, you know, good specs, with Apple silicon, just because of what all it can do, and then all the things that Apple didn't take away, you know. So I'm looking forward to that kind of being, and it's kind of neat. Like, you know, the phone is like, you know, obviously useful in specific situations. The Mac is useful in other situations, and not having that in between of like, well, you know, should I try it here and then start there? You know, that kind of thing is nice. And I can't undersell the value of a notebook. I'm really enjoying it.
So. Yeah. Like my iPad, I mean, I'm still on the 2015 iPad Pro, and until they fix the software situation, I'm going to have no interest in changing it, because I'm just going to have the same frustrations, and it'll just sit unused. I just know it will. Like,
sure.
And similar to WatchOS 7, the iPad OS 14 updates were similarly like inconsequential. That's a good word, right? Rather than being like non-existent, there were improvements, there were enhancements, but I think the core problems of the product, those operating system updates did nothing to address that. Like, adding Scribble for better, you know, for handwriting entry into text fields using the pencil is fine and great, but I don't think that's what most people are like annoyed at the iPad about, or resisting to use it for more things. Like, I don't know when I'm going to want to scribble into a text field, really, apart from occasionally when, you know, I've been drawing maybe, and then I just need to quickly write something down. But in the general scheme of things, like critical issues like the multitasking situation, that's really what makes the iPad good. And they're just not addressing it for years and years
iPad
and years.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. Last thing I'll say, I guess, is that, I kind of feel like what I'm doing now is like hitting reset, and then I'm being more like the average consumer and kind of trying to have like that perspective. And I, you know, looking around, like, it's less common to not have an Apple Watch than it is to have one, which is a total shift from like, you know, 5 years ago.
I don't want to be doomsday about it. Like, obviously Apple's perfectly fine and their products are very, very good. But I do think you reach this kind of point where you can't have, like, you're never going to be able to get satisfaction out of everything they have, because everything overlaps, right? And so you end up...
And everything isn't for everyone for all the time.
And so you end up splitting out into, like, these three are what you use, and then the other stuff you don't really have to care about as much.
Yeah, and then I guess the big thing looming is Apple Glasses or whatever this ends up being called. And that's interesting to me now as I drive my car, you know, when I've got the kids with me and everything. But like, there's no distance I don't want to travel on my motorcycle if I'm going by myself. And in that case, you know, the interface is my Bluetooth helmet. And so I'm getting, you know, entertainment and information through audio only. In the car, I'm using CarPlay, of course. and you know, very much enjoy and appreciate that. But then you know, on the motorcycle, it's like, man, I wonder what Apple Glasses could do in that situation. You know, one thing is that kind of annoys me, but is true, is that AirPods and Beats headphones can do reply to messages with Siri, you know, and you can't do that on like the Bluetooth helmet because it's not an Apple proprietary chip. And we talked about it a little bit pre-show last week of like, what, why not? And we really couldn't come up with a good answer. And so, you know, but so that I don't have like the, you get a message, Siri reads it too, you can reply back. You just get a ding and then you can ask Siri like what it says, but then it says unlock your iPhone to do that. So it's no good. But, you know, so I am curious now more than ever of like, what will Apple Glasses be like? You know, does it give you that visual element, but safely? You know, I'd never been interested in it before. It's been like, you know, we'll see what it does, but it's, you know, not really enticing. Now I'm kind of curious.
Yeah. I think it's just an important note that, you know, even us like hardcore users, we still don't find value in every single product that Apple makes, right? And that's perfectly fine. And as a listener or as a normal consumer, you shouldn't feel pressure to either, right? Like, you know, get benefits. And I think it's good that Apple is pretty aggressive at like basically just cannibalizing every product in their own lineup, right? So they're not like holding back stuff that this should do this when this doesn't. You know what I mean? Like, because they could have very easy, like, not let the iPhone do sleep tracking and make you have the watch to do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, and they don't, they generally don't do that. So in that way, you know, they're kind of running their business nicely so that you don't feel it's mandatory to literally own everything.
Yeah. It's a healthy position. It's a healthy viewpoint. So yeah.
Okay. Let's take our second sponsor and then we'll finish up with some Apple news. So everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds. If you're working out at the gym or just trying to concentrate when working at home, you want to hear what you want to listen to, not what is going on in the rest of your house or wherever you are. Before you go out and drop hundreds of dollars on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of other premium wireless earbuds on the market with rich sound quality and bass. Raycon have just released their newest model, the Everyday E25 earbuds, with 6 hours of playtime, seamless pairing, and a more compact design for a comfortable, noise-isolating fit. Raycon earbuds are stylish and discreet, with no dangling wires or stems to distract anyone during a video call. Now, Zach, you've had a chance to try these out, right?
Yeah, these are neat. You know, you think of, you know, kind of going back to what we were talking about, you know, you have to have all the Apple stuff and everything Apple, and, you know, that kind of thing. These are neat. And for the price, they're really impressive. They're a different style than say, AirPods. So they go in your ear, and they got the little like in-ear tip, and then this kind of a little bean shape, and then it sits flush in your ear, and it's so, it feels futuristic. Like this is maybe where AirPods could go in the future. And they, you know, they've each one has a button, so they've really kind of pulled off like miniaturization and what you can do with a sleek earbud. And then the sound quality is going to impress you, because, you know, you're like, I don't know what to expect. Oh, that's really good. And actually, before I got my Bluetooth motorcycle helmet, I was using these because there's no stem. And with the AirPods, I would try like one AirPod in one ear for navigation, and the helmet, you know, necessarily is tight. And so it would like shift the AirPod, and I'd pull over sometimes and like have to like adjust the back of my ear.
Sure.
And with these, they're like totally flat, you know, flush with your ear. So you don't have that problem. Plus they just look really cool. Like it's hard to tell that you're wearing anything in your ears. So I was impressed with these.
Nice. Now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/happyhour. From that page, use promo code HAPPY15 at checkout. That's HAPPY number 15. One more time, go to buyraycon.com/happyhour for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds with promo code HAPPY15. buyraycon.com/happyhour.
Thanks, Raycon. All right, let's talk about some more stuff. So we talked about, you know, kind of my slight little purge there. Apple's purging some things. You know, they're going to purge the charger in the box for the iPhone 12. You know, just really focus on what they'd like. That's terrible. But then there's like good news, I guess, which is that the lightning cable that will come with at least some version of the iPhone 12 will be of a better quality. And I guess this is the version that comes with the Pro. It looks good. I mean, they didn't like invent the braided cable, but this is would be the first time that Apple sells one.
Yeah, I guess this is going to be their compensation for not shipping earbuds or power bricks in the box. They're giving you a lightning cable that doesn't fray so easily. So, you know, our good friend Love to Dream on Twitter, he confirmed that they're planning to do a new lightning cable, which has a braided end. And we've seen Apple do braided cables with like the HomePod power cable, for instance. And I really like braided cables. And when I buy third-party lightning cables, I tend to buy the braided ones. And so it would be nice that Apple does it as well. Like, I don't think adding a high-quality lightning cable will make people shut up about the power brick and the earbuds being missing. So it's not really going to quell those complaints, but just on its own isolated situation, Apple's lightning cables could be nicer quality, and you know, making them braided definitely helps durability and longevity on that basis.
You have to imagine that these will be sold separately too.
Yeah, for sure.
Eventually, if not right at first, and you know, they'll probably be sold for a premium price because they're not just the basic ones; they're braided, and they'll have that you know, premium markup on it. But these, I mean, these would be the, I would invest in, you know, a small set of these, even if they're white only, not a block option, you know, for a long time. And part of that is like in my wife's car, she has a really long lightning cable that like reaches to the back seat, and that's cool, but it's got like wires coming out of the tip of it, like, you know, between the connector and the wire.
Yeah.
And I don't use it because it feels like a fire hazard in a car that could explode, but she does. And then because it reaches the kids in the back seat, which is also just probably not good. But then, like, often what I'll see in terms of lightning cables not holding up, there's two things. One is that, you know, if you don't hold it, the connector part of it, then the wire part is very weak. That doesn't really change with braided cables, but it's not as bad. The other thing is the way it handles sunlight. Like, you can bake a lightning cable, a 30-pin cable before that, you know. They will literally turn orange and stop working. And that makes them, like, very vulnerable to fraying. And so a braided cable, you've got a little bit more, you know, kind of defense against that happening because it's a different material. So I'm all on board the braided cable train, you know. No one should buy an iPhone 12 for it, but even if it's not sold separately at first, you know, but it's a nice perk.
Yeah.
The charger situation, so I've not wrapped my head around that yet. And people, you know, when I talk to regular people that are just not following the stuff, they ask me about it. The rumor is getting out there. So
yeah, people, I've had people tell me that they're not happy about it either, that, yeah, you know, it's definitely, like, when it happens, it's going to cause headlines. We just know it will. Like,
yes.
It's going to be a mess.
Yeah.
Quite rightly so, probably.
That's right.
Quo gave us another update on the ARM transition roadmap. Obviously, he's been talking about the 13.3-inch Pro being the first ARM Mac later this year. We're expecting the iMac as well at some point. Now he's saying there is going to be a MacBook Air with Apple Silicon going to production in the fourth quarter, so either late this year or releasing late this year or early next year. And then in 2021, the 13.3-inch MacBook Pro will get replaced by a 14-inch version, and there'll be an update to the 16-inch, and the new 14-inch and the 16-inch will be redesigned. So we'll get like a more significant update to both of the MacBook Pro models next year, according to Quo, which is kind of interesting because that also means they're just going to be this kind of like stepping stone on Apple Silicon Mac 13-inch by the end of this year as well. So an interesting roadmap, but I think it'd be cool if they can like do something more significant. Obviously he doesn't detail the what's actually makes up the redesign, but you know, like a Face ID, different colors maybe, you know, like I'm kind of down for a change from the standard like metal and glass, you know, dark gray look. So if they could do something more drastic for like 16-inch MacBook Pro, for instance, you know,
we were ready for that when the 16-inch MacBook Pro came out. Remember the first time it leaked from Apple, and apparently, like, you know, through a video of the product, and it was like, really?
Yeah.
I think we passed on it the first time because we didn't think it was different.
I think that was right. Yeah,
unbelievably similar. So yeah, we are certainly ready. So I'm trying to point this out. So 13-inch, ARM 13-inch ARM Air first, and then and those aren't expected to be like a new design. You know, people may want that to happen, but I don't think that's being projected yet.
Yeah, just literally basically the same bodies today, but they're swapping out the processors.
Yeah, which is okay. It's going to be a better machine for it. The 14-inch would be a different design. The 16-inch, it's the same screen size, but, if you make any design tweaks of that thing, then it will look different than the 2016 MacBook Pro. So that's cool. I think that the 13-inch one I would skip, the Air I would skip, because those aren't machines I use now. And even with ARM, even with Apple Silicon, it's not that tempting.
Yep.
But then the 14-inch or 16-inch, depending on the specs between those two things, that would be interesting. And you can kind of imagine that the 14-inch would be the same, similar body as the 13-inch. And so that you'd not be, wouldn't be that much different in terms of what you're carrying around. So mid-2021, that's the goal for new Macs, for I think probably both of
them. Yeah, give me that 16-inch, baby. I'm ready.
That's right. Yeah, I will sell this one in a heartbeat. Yeah.
Yeah, everyone keeps I've heard a lot of other podcasts about how people are going to be so hesitant, or, people are going to wait out the first generation stuff. I think people are going to love it. Like most normal people buying MacBooks don't even know what the processor is. They'll just buy it because it's the MacBook 13-inch or whatever, and they'll just be happy that it's got really long battery life or it's really fast.
It's like, yeah, this one's got a good battery and it can run the same apps from your phone that's awesome.
It can run all your existing apps, and it can run all the apps from the iOS app store as well.
They didn't take anything away.
Yeah, so I think people are going to buy them in droves. They're going to be great.
Me too. Yeah, I am very excited. So we'll plan for next WWDC. We'll be purchasing those redesigned ARM MacBook Pros.
Yeah, for sure. The other thing that happened this week is 13.6 did come out, as we reported last week. There was the GM, and we had the release notes. And indeed, Apple News Plus Audio was part of that. I would have used my Apple News Plus trial to test out the audio stuff, because I'm pretty interested in it. Unfortunately, it's US only, so I can't, which is kind of a...
You can't be trusted with the news. What would you do
How
with
could
it?
A British person listen to American reading? That'd just be... I just wouldn't know what they're saying.
We invented the language,
That's kind of stupid to me. They should just... let it happen. Apple News has many geographic limits, as loads of people on Twitter love to tell me every time I talk about an Apple News product, because it's only in Australia, Canada, US, and UK. So most of the world is still can't even use the news
Useless.
App, right? Yeah. Let alone News Plus. And so that is that's a disappointment too. But even for News Plus Audio, they say they're going to do about 20 shows a week. So 20 stories a week will be recorded for audio listening. They do have some nice features. So if you start reading a story with your eyes, on your phone, and then you get in your car, you can, on CarPlay, you can continue reading the story using the audio version from the sentence where you stop reading. So there's some cool integrations there and stuff. And I'd love to try it, but geographic restrictions are dumb. So
the feature that Apple did recently, where you can read part of a story in Apple News in general, not even the Plus stuff, and then it syncs to your other devices. So in this case, iPhone, Mac, iPhone. I was kind of just testing out Space Explorer in Apple News, because after a month, it was finally approved. It looks really cool. And I was just like, okay, here's halfway down an article. And then I was looking on the Mac. Oh, it's the exact same place, which is a very specific spot in the article. So it works well.
Yeah.
The audio stuff I haven't tried yet. I've subscribed to the podcast, haven't listened yet because this is all brand new. But I'm excited about the podcast, because it's just one more place to kind of a daily briefing from a variety of sources through Apple. You just won't learn that Apple's account was hacked for Twitter. There will be that sort of filter. The News Plus audio stuff, I'm going to try it out, but, at $10 a month, the News Plus product isn't for me. There's a version of it that I would purchase, but right now it's too limited in terms of the sources and, that I'd like to read. So, and listen,
they're definitely prepping for the big content bundle, and then a lot more people definitely be enjoying the News Plus audio stuff. The free Apple News Today podcast is hosted by Shumitu Besu and Duarte Gerardino. They're from public radio, NPR and stuff. So Apple hired professional broadcasters that basically did daily news shows at other places. Now they're doing
for Apple. We turned them down for listeners. We didn't want to you know, lose this.
Yeah. Unfortunately, Tim Cook didn't phone me up. But yeah, I listened to the first episode. It sounded great, good quality, interesting, diverse stories. And although it's not being advertised outside of the US, if you find the link, you can subscribe to it wherever you are, and it's completely free. So I'd recommend it. Just a nice daily update briefing. It comes.
You can put it in Overcast.
You can put it in other podcast apps too. It's not exclusive. Yeah. So it's just Apple News Today. A nice addition. And obviously, you can get it through the Apple News app if you're in the US. Mm-hmm. And then finally, just a quick update on TV Plus stuff. So Greyhound obviously came out last week. I watched it the weekend. I enjoyed it. I wouldn't say it's the best movie of all time. It was perfectly fine. I actually kind of preferred The Banker, like the other Apple original film that we've seen, right? But Greyhound was great. And
that was a good feel-good movie.
Yeah. Greyhound was fine. And according to Deadline, it set viewership records for Apple TV Plus. They called it commensurate with a summer theatrical big budget box office hit. So whatever that means, Greyhound's fitting the bill. Clearly, Apple's happy with it. Like, I'm pretty sure the source is Deadline article with some, you know, Apple source talking off the record because they don't want to talk about numbers publicly. But they Deadline keeps seeming to have reports like Defending Jacob was a breakout hit for Apple TV Plus, and now Greyhound's a breakout hit for Apple TV Plus. So it's kind of the indirect PR channel. But it seems fine. I do think it's interesting that, like, I think we're going to see more film acquisitions during this time from Apple where they wouldn't have done it normally because the pandemic's withholding production, right? Like, there was a panel discussion that Apple posted on their Apple TV YouTube channel, which was with the Morning Show cast, and the producer that said at the end that they only managed to finish half of the first episode before they had to shut down. So that season two is definitely way off in the future. Like, and just this week, they actually announced that they're acquiring Palmer, which is a film starring Justin Timberlake, and that's, I believe, all the principal photography of that happened way back in November. So that film is, if it's in post-production basically at this point. So it should actually be coming out soon. And we've also seen them acquire shows from Israel for as well, like Tehran and Losing Alice. So I think these are things that Apple might not have necessarily bought if they had the freedom to be producing whatever they want. But given, you know, the lockdown situation, although pandemic restrictions are starting to ease, clearly, their catalog was hurt badly by this. Producer M. Night Shyamalan said that season two of that will be filming this fall.
They even have a cut for it.
But yeah, like they're about halfway through their second season. So again, I think originally Apple was planning to have like their big shows, Morning Show, Servant, be ready for the fall, and that's just not going to happen. And so they're trying to rustle up this content, like acquiring Greyhound, like getting this Justin Timberlake film, like acquiring this Israeli stuff. And I think we'll probably end up seeing them do some sort of like extension of the free trial just to like, even without the pandemic, they're probably going to extend the free trial anyway, just because the TV Plus content library isn't big enough to survive on its own yet. But the pandemic almost gives them a nice marketing reason, like, you know, the season two of The Morning Show isn't ready yet, so we're giving you an extra 6 months, or we're giving you another, you know, we're giving you one more year round, or maybe that will still be limited to hardware, but they'll let you renew your free year. Because right now, if you buy two pieces of hardware, you still only get one for a year. I could see them doing it where November comes around. If you buy another piece of hardware, you get another free year, just to keep the ball rolling over on TV Plus while the library expands. So.
Yeah, you get to pick a charger or a TV Plus.
That's definitely not going to happen. You pick. I actually saw people suggest that, like on Twitter and stuff, because people can't get in their head that Apple is just going to remove these accessories and be done with it, right? Like, people were like, oh, maybe they'll just offer some free services instead of a charger. Like, I don't think Apple wants to belittle its services to be like the equivalent of a charger. Do you know what I mean? Like, like that just sounds horrible to them. They're like, oh, well, our premium TV Plus service, including all these massive celebrities and these big names and Steven Spielberg and all this stuff. Oh yeah, that's about the same value as a charger. So do you want a charger or do you want TV Plus? Like, their branding there is just terrible. So that's never going to happen. But just to rebut some people that I actually saw tweeting about that. So there you go.
Yeah. And we saw For All Mankind season two kind of pop up a little bit too, right? From astronaut Garrett Reisman, who posted a photo, I think, of his son and what appears to be Johnson Space Center, but it's not, it's in LA, I believe. So I'm looking forward to that, as you can imagine. And that's a thing where I hope to have we can talk to him again about For All Mankind season two, because he teased it out. So all right, what's going on with Peacock?
Yeah, just a quick thing to wrap up. The Peacock streaming service is the last of the big streaming services to debut. It's a free option, which is kind of a nice refresher for people that don't want to add monthly charges. That will be the streaming service that gets The Office when it leaves Netflix at the end of this year. It's by NBC Universal. It's ad-supported. There is two paid tiers, one which still offers ads but gives you more content, and then a higher which basically has no ads at all, but you have to pay more for it. Or you can just have the free tier, which offers, you know, a decent range of content, but you have to suffer through a lot of advertising, just like a traditional TV network. What is kind of funny about this, though, is that now the Apple TVs easily come out, like the Apple TV set-top box has easily come out as like the front runner for the most compatible streaming device, because Amazon Fire and Roku are still having battles over their terms for Peacock and HBO Max. So both the two massive like streaming US services are still having battles over terms, because Roku wants a share of advertising revenue. Amazon is kind of forcing them to be part of Prime channels, whereas Apple's like, if you give us 15-30% of your subscription, we'll let you in. Yeah. So they seem like, for all the talk about like the App Store being monopolistic and predatory, Peacock and HBO are happy with it. So because Apple's like, yeah, we don't care about the Apple TV channel, HBO, you can get rid of that. As long as you give us the subscription share, we'll let you in. Have a nice time. And so like the Apple TV's far come out now as like the most compatible streaming device. And I think we'll probably see quite a lot of people switch over, because people are stuck on Roku and Amazon. They've been frustrated they're going to get HBO Max. And now they're doubly frustrated that they can't get Peacock either. And I believe on Roku devices, the HBO Go app is set to, the deal for that is set to expire at the end of July. So if they don't, if Roku and HBO don't get along by the end of July, they literally won't be a way to watch HBO on Roku anymore. So it's a big culmination of things, and the Apple TV is just sitting there like, yes, I'm really expensive, but we support everything. It's kind of a funny status quo.
Yeah, and maybe we still expect there to be a revision to the Apple TV. I think we'll have more on that eventually too. And isn't the YouTube situation improving, the 4K YouTube situation?
Correct, yeah. So when TVOS 14 comes out, the Apple TV 4K will support 4K YouTube finally as well. So that was the last big tick off the list for that too.
Yeah, cool. Apple TV's in a better place. I have done the thing where you go on TVOS 14, where you go and you just have one of the four categories or any combination of to be your screensaver. And so I'm just doing space ones right now, and I'm so glad that's a feature. That's like my favorite feature of TVOS 14, which there's a lot of competition of. So.
Nice.
Yep. Do you have about 10 more minutes?
Sure.
Yeah, cool. All right. I want to go through the chat and answer some of these questions that we've received today on YouTube. Before that, we mentioned our friend Love to Dream, which is the Twitter account that tweets cryptically and sometimes fortune telling kind of way. They tweeted out AE, this is all caps, AE.AWRNI. Do you have any guess at what that is?
AE.AWRNI. Well, AW makes you think Apple Watch, but I'm not sure.
Okay. I replied to them and said, because it's AEAWRNI, I said Airport Express dot Apple will re-enter networking industry. And it fits the bill, so I got a clap back on that, so you know it's confirmed now. All right, let's take a look at some questions here. I know a friend Sigmund asked if with my kind of focus on just the iPhone and the Mac now, what will happen to watch time, and the answer is I've kind of been like shopping it around. I was like looking for a new host, nothing confirmed yet. Probably we'll just kind of put it on the shelf for a little while and you know, come back to it later. I'm doing SpaceTime, which is so fun, to have that connection with WatchTime and SpaceTime. I'll do a new episode of WatchTime later this month and kind of give a status update on that.
Yeah. Sumyej Sen asked, do you think Apple is trying to get into the gaming industry? Obviously, they already kind of are in the mobile gaming industry, just by the fact that they run, you know, the most profitable app store in the world. But with Apple Arcade, I definitely think we're going to see them try and double down on being like a proper like console equivalent. Like they're not going to offer the graphical fidelity of, you know, PlayStation 5 or Xbox Series X, but I think they're going to offer like a serious competitor to like the future of the Nintendo home console. Like people that would buy you know, a Switch or something might now be considered an Apple TV in the future when they, you know, give it a graphics boost, they start getting bigger franchises on Apple Arcade, that kind of thing. Like, I think Apple Arcade gives them a way to fund, like, richer, deeper games that would actually make it, you know, more console competitive. Obviously, we did hear from the Bloomberg rumor about, like, they're focusing more on, like, you know, games, like puzzle games and levels, which is disappointing, but from everything we heard outside of that, it does seem they're kind of barring that direction, trying to get like some really powerful graphics hardware into a future Apple TV that can make it, you know, a big deal. Plus, we've seen them invest more into the game controller framework with iOS 14, tvOS 14. And there are rumblings that they're making their own game controller next year. So I definitely think they're heading in that direction. Apple Arcade gives them, you know, a big motivation to do that.
Yep. Ishan Gomes asked, do you think the Apple Watch Series 6 will have a built-in Apple calorie water regulating app? No evidence that it will. I think it would be cool, but I think they kind of lean on others to do that. And I think that the best ones to look at are calorie, C-A-L-O-R-Y, for like strictly inputting calorie, like the number of calories that you're logging. You can have like favorited foods and stuff like that too, and it works with Siri. But calorie and then Waterminder is like the go-to. I think it's from the same developers even. And I think that calories like either has or will have water integration too. So you can have it all in one app, but that's the app that is designed using, you know, kind of like Apple's style of a built-in app. So it's the closest thing. I don't think that Apple's going to do, like, we would see that with watchOS 7, not just with Series 6 hardware.
Right.
Because that'd just be a kind of an app situation.
Nicholas Morrow asks, do you think Apple will redesign the Apple Card or update it yearly like the rest of their product lines? I think we've seen probably the major development for the Apple Card this year with the addition of the monthly payments programs across Apple's entire hardware line. So you can buy an iPhone now monthly payments, you can buy a Mac on monthly payments, you can buy an iPad, you can buy an Apple Watch, you can buy anything. Plus, we saw them launch the web portal for Apple Card, which is kind of the leading complaint there for that service, is that people want a way to actually be able to like pay their bill and download transactions mm-hmm. that doesn't involve using their phone. So now you can go to card.apple.com and do it there. And that even added some form of Mint integration in the last couple of weeks too. So a lot of the big feature request stuff from the original launch of the Apple Card have been addressed now. Will we see more on Apple Card this year? I guess probably no, but I think that's like a yearly update, right? Because it's you know, just a year and change on from when it launched. Like the Apple Card launched in August last year. So, you know, about a year later, they've added a web portal, they've added, you know, various features. So I think they'll definitely carry on iterating on it.
Yeah, and they release updates to it when they're ready, not just all at once, like save a bunch up and put it out there. So that's good for a service like this. I think that the biggest change that kind of like shows how aggressive they are about wanting to capture customers is that if people apply and are declined, then they have the proactive like steps to the path to Apple mm-hmm. Card, which is a balance of we want more customers for Apple Card and also like here's how to improve your financial health situation. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yep. And then finally, we'll answer one more. This is from Mike Thornback. So there's a YouTuber that was making the leap into macOS 11, was going to start layering AR into the platform. Do you think that's realistic? Is telegraphing release of Apple Glass for this fall? I don't think anything with this fall. I'm not so sure what macOS 11, I think people try to read into the redesign way too much. Yeah. I think it's just a fresh redesign.
Yeah, like I've seen a lot of that where people are like, his depth. So, hey, it's AR because there's, you know, but if you actually look at Mac icons on Catalina, you know, that's why the icons look like that. It's because they're trying to just advance from the base of the Catalina icons. So it's like, it's just a redesign that I wouldn't associate with any of other Apple's products. The Apple Glasses are, you know, probably going to be announced next year and come out in probably the year after that. And I doubt the UI will look anything like macOS.
It'll be more like the Watch UI projected and like even thinner than the Watch UI, even lighter than the Watch UI. The translucency will actually be like, it just won't be anything there because it's part of it's a heads up display. But as I mentioned earlier, I'm excited about Apple Glass now that I'm kind of thinking of different applications for it, ways to use it. So, yeah, cool. All right. Thanks for taking the time to answer some questions with me. That was fun.
For sure. Well,
I've been promising that for a few weeks.
We will do it again.
Chance to, yeah. So, yeah, totally. All right, that is the Happy Hour podcast. Thanks again to our sponsors, Raycon Earbuds and Sunbasket. Please support our sponsors. That helps us do the podcast, and we really appreciate that. Means a lot to us. You can check out my new podcast, Space Time. It's in Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Spotify. It's on YouTube. I'll have links for that in the show notes this week. And if you have any feedback for Happy Hour, you can email us at happyhour@9to5mac.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Apollo Zach, and I write space news for Space Explored in the 9to5 network. Pretty soon, in 2 weeks, I'll be going to the Mars Perseverance rover launch in person as NASA credentialed media. So I'm very excited about that. And then Mayo, you can be followed on Twitter at
BZA Mayo.
And you also blog at
BZAMayo.com.
All right. Nice. And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.